Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on WGN, 720 AM, and then WGN everywhere. Anywhere you can find us on the web. The WGN app, we think, is particularly great.
It is good. It's easy breezy.
For your phone or your tablet.
Download it, and then all you do is you just press play.
Yep, and we're there.
And we're right there
right.
for you.
We're either on the mainstream, sometimes we're on the other stream, but you can find us, you can find all kinds of stuff. It's crazy. There's a lot of content that gets delivered out of this this station every day, not just what goes on the radio, but what goes on the web. And it's all good to average. I will say that. Oh, good to great to average.
Thank you. That's better.
Oh, man. All right. This week, we have been talking about the 40th anniversary of the crash of Flight 191, American Airlines 191. May 25th, 1979, DC-10, 270 passengers on board, and takes off from O'Hare on a Friday afternoon, early Friday. I think like at 2 o'clock, 2:30, something like that in the afternoon, rolling down the runway, 32 right, and an engine falls off as it's taking off. And that aircraft, we'll recall, that's one engine on either wing and then another one in the tail. This is a jumbo jet, twin aisle, big thing.
Yeah.
As it's climbing out, there had been some hydraulic cables that had been cut by the engine coming off and some other impact. Pilots lost control, and within 30 seconds of takeoff, it barreled down into a field. Just north and west of the city, or of O'Hare. And when it did that, it went in fully laden with fuel. Right. So it created not only an unrecoverable crash for all passengers and crew on board, but it also created a firestorm.
Yeah.
Which, in this field, and which lasted for hours and hours and hours and hours. And Mac McCall is joining us. He is now the commissioner of the Glendale, Arizona Airport, but he was a shift operations supervisor at O'Hare on that day. And Mac, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. All right, so just take me through what the events of that afternoon were for you. So it's a normal day so far, right?
Well, good afternoon. Well, for me, I was scheduled to be the shift duty manager on the 4 to 12 shift, and the aircraft accident happened actually a little after 3 o'clock, and I had just pulled into our maintenance garage, and I was getting into the dispatch office, walking over to the dispatch office to check the motor pool to get a car. And since I was a little bit early, there was no cars for me yet, and that's when I heard over the radio that one of our field engineers that was out in the field doing some survey work called Mayday. Hmm. Now, that's an unusual thing to hear over the construction radio. So I started listening, and I saw this big plume of smoke out the garage door northwest of the airport, and then our emergency notification system went off, and since there wasn't, my normal cars were not in yet because they were all on the field, I just took a car that used to be Vic Cass, who was the carpentry foreman, which had all the radios required in it. So I started taking off across the field to where the accident site was at, and I heard one of the things that I know is serious once I hear this, and the air traffic control ground controller said, all aircraft, hold your position, give way to all emergency vehicles. And once you hear that, you know there's a big problem.
Yeah.
So I checked in and began to go toward the accident site where I saw the smoke. And unfortunately, I made the mistake of coming up on the accident downwind rather than upwind. And it was just acrid, terrible, devastating smoke.
Yeah.
And as I got tried to get to the side of it and got closer, I started looking for an airplane. And I couldn't find an airplane. I could see the fire and I could see the site, but I couldn't find an airplane. And as time went on and we got the flames under control, I realized that the airplane had literally melted. The only thing that we had there were, you know, seats and a couple of engines. There was an engine back on the runway on 32 right, and it was a horrific scene, and everything you can think of, you know, that would be on an airplane was in pieces somewhere, including the passengers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was a very devastating scene. And, you know, back in those days, there was no such thing as PTSD or any of that stuff. You know, for 10 years afterwards, you know, I would second guess everything I did, because this was an accident that didn't have to happen. This was a shortcut that was done by the maintenance supervisor of American Airlines there. And instead of taking the engine and the pylon off separately, he took it off in one piece.
And then crack the pylon when they put it back on.
Well, it had there's two main strut bolts, and then there's 38 bolts that hold those engines on, and it caused a crack in the one main bolt, and that caused the, after enough cycles, you know, as you know, as an airplane takes off, that's the most critical part on the airplane, and the most critical part on the pilot is the landing. So after enough cycles of that high pressure on the takeoff, it snapped. And that pulled all the other 38 bolts out and the hydraulics.
Yeah.
It had to be one.
Pretty much was.
Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Go.
I was just saying that it had to be.
Pretty much.
I apologize.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just thinking of what you've seen and what you've been through, and when you just said that you've lived with it since. And you hear that from the people who've been interviewed, who witnessed this horrific accident, and the fact is that when all those emergency vehicles went to that scene, they hoped and prayed that they were going to be able to help save people, and the reality was there was no one to save. No one had a chance on board that plane.
Well, one of the things over the radio, we had one Chicago police field car that was almost the first on the scene, and he reported back, and when they said how bad, and he just said bad, 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 bad.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I told the story yesterday. My dad was on the scene the next day as part of recovery. Actually, that night, after the sun went down, and through that morning into the next day as part of the recovery efforts, because as close as they could get, it took them about 4 hours to strike the fire. And it wasn't even strikeable in the beginning, mm-hmm. because you have so
That's
much
right.
jet fuel and so much other, you know, fuel for a fire like that. And I lived downtown at that time. I grew up downtown.
Yeah.
And you could see the tower of smoke over the buildings. You know, there was, because it was, you know, sort of a broken, cloudy, sunny day. I'll never forget that day, because it was, you know, a late May afternoon, and that black tower of smoke was so defined, because that fire had gotten so hot, and there was no, you know, there was no sense that there would be a recovery. There was just this question, because someone had a picture mm-hmm. of the plane as it was basically stalling in air, as it had gone vertical in terms of its wings, and there was a wing stall, and then thing just went right into the ground after that at, you know, a pretty good rate of speed, and then with all that jet fuel on board, it was just all over.
Yeah.
And there are so many changes, though, Mac. I know you're still in aviation. There were so many changes to the rules of airline rules, mechanics rules, that came directly out of this crash.
Well, the 70s, you know, the mid and late 70s in general caused a lot of changes. As you know, in 1978, the airlines used to be regulated. They got a route. And as you know, once the regulation came in, any airline was able to fly anywhere, and it became a situation like for us old guys, you know, the phone company in the old days, you had one number to call, they took care of everything. Now you've got all these competing phone companies. Well, you've got all these competing airlines now as well. But the thing that really sunk the DC-10 and got it out of passenger service was, you may remember sometime later, that Flight 232 crashed in Sioux City, Iowa.
Right.
Which was from Denver en route to Chicago. And once again, I was the manager on duty. And this time I was at the gate area of the place at O'Hare, where the plane was supposed to come in.
Yeah.
And later that day, after I had been at the gate a while and I'm trying to coordinate activities for passengers that are trying to find out what happened. They flew, United flew in about 100 survivors that, you know, that decided to get on the plane, the next plane, and come to Chicago. And it was really an interesting situation because I saw some wonderful reunions that day, but some terrible tragedies, you know, and that kind of stuff. You know, as bad as it was at the 191 site, being at the gate, looking at the eyes of the mothers and the fathers and the sisters and the brothers, that was pretty difficult as well, I got to tell you. And the funny thing about that, well, not funny necessarily, but the interesting thing about that was some of those survivors got off the plane and looked like they just got out of Vogue magazine. You know, their hair wasn't a problem, their suits were fine, and other people were all, you know, ripped up in bandages and their clothes shredded. It's just an airplane crash is just like the luck of the draw.
Right. That particular crash that happened in Sioux City. They had lost hydraulics again, and they had the pilots had, it was United pilots, and they literally had a senior pilot on board who was deadheading, and he was able to join the crew in the cockpit and steer the aircraft using the left and right engines to steer left and right. It really got a very, very old school aviation. Yep. And so as they just approached the threshold of the runway in Sioux City for the emergency landing, they had an unfortunate shift in wind, and there was a bit of a down pressure wind on them, and that it hit hard and then popped up and started to roll. That aircraft rolled in a ball of fire down the runway in Sioux City, and when you saw that there's nobody who could ever possibly survive it, and an entire section of the sort of the beginning of the economy class literally got thrust out into a cornfield. And there were, I think, was it 12 or 15 seats that were still all connected to each other that landed in the cornfield. And those people, you know, heads up, those people just unbuckled themselves and walked out.
Oh, my word.
Yep.
I mean, it was the craziest thing you could possibly imagine. And when you see the video of that crash, because there were news crews there, because they knew this plane was coming in. Uh-huh. So there's a bunch of different video of this thing barreling, and you know, on fire down the runway. To your point, Mac, absolutely. You have no idea what the possibility is. And there were people in the front of the aircraft and the back of the aircraft that survived that thing. Now, again, mercifully, I think there were dozens who survived that. More died than lived. But it still was an amazing survival rate based on the horrific violence of that crash. Mac, thank you for your service. And thank you for your time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mac.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Mac McCall, who is now a commissioner at Glendale, Arizona's airport, but was at O'Hare for many, many, many years and one of the first on the scene for 191 when it crashed 40 years ago on Saturday. Wow. All right, let's check in now with Kim. What's going on in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour?
New charges filed today against controversial attorney Michael Avenatti.